Blog Talk Radio.
Be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Okay, hello everybody, and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. We are going to reconnect Jacob Westendorf, our typical leadoff host. Looks like we might be having some technical difficulties there. I am Jason Perrone of Cheesehead TV, and as soon as Jake joins us, we will bring him back on, which may be right now. Let's see. Jake, are you on?
I'm here.
All right, welcome to the show. It's all you.
I swear that happens once a freaking month. But nonetheless, it's happened, and that's where we're at. So we'll just deal with it and move on. My friends and everybody, I went through the introduction. I thought it was one of my better ones, but none of you heard that, so I'm not going to redo it again because nobody is here to listen to what cool things I come up with. We are here to talk football, and last night, it is Sunday right now, last night we had our first taste of meaningful football games in the last, what, since last August, right? So that was nice to see that Florida and Miami played. It was a good game. And Jason, after that, I'm sure something that brought a little smile to your face was that the Arizona Wildcats were beaten by, I gotta lie, I don't think, is it the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors? That's the name that sticks out in my head, but I don't know if that's their actual team name. But yeah, Arizona was beaten last night, which I'm sure makes you happy. And when you're happy, the rest of this show is happy. But college football will start en masse this weekend on Saturday. And then next Thursday will be the NFL, the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears kicking off the 100th season in the history of the NFL. But before we get to that, we have a special guest today. And before we bring him on, we have a little bit of news that we want to discuss briefly. We'll start with the Packers stuff, even though that was not the biggest news, as we'll get to here briefly. But Jason, today, this morning, Josh Jones was released, former second round pick, picked over the likes of Alvin Kamara and Juju Smith-Schuster, which kind of makes that a little more painful. A move that you were kind of hoping that the two sides were just going to let bygones be bygones after the offseason stuff, but it remains pretty clear that this just wasn't something that was going to work for Josh Jones in Green Bay. He had flashes at times of potentially, honestly, being a brilliant player. He just never really put it all together from a consistency standpoint and really got into Mike Pettine's doghouse early and never worked his way out. So I don't think this was all that surprising. He was held out of the first preseason game. They called it a little nagging injury, and then after that it was an illness, and it just seemed like too many things that were maybe not the most genuine in terms of how they actually felt. So, Jason, real quickly, what's your reaction to the Josh Jones news?
Yeah, not surprising at all. I mean, maybe with Oren Burks and Curtis Bolton being hurt, you thought maybe they would work him in the middle and kind of try to fill the hole there. It seemed like they'd kind of made up. He did change his number, which doesn't necessarily mean he was gone or going to stay, but ultimately it was what it appeared to be, which was just two sides not able to agree on how life should go for each of them, and Josh Jones just may not have been what the Packers hoped that he would be and wasn't seen as a obviously not seen as a viable part of this defense. Whenever you let a guy go, I think you're pretty much admitting that it didn't work out. So they had the right idea, and I think we all, you know, got a little fool's gold with that 2017 Week 3 game against the Bengals and the way that Jones played in that game. But, yeah, I think you're right. Pettine comes in, changes the defense a little bit. Things just didn't pan out. Now they move on, and they'll have to probably make some moves. I wrote a piece for Cheesehead TV that went this morning that talked about the Packers likely going to add some more talent this next week leading into the beginning of the season. And whoever they add is obviously probably going to be somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience or practice time with the team. So that's always an interesting thing. But, yeah, I mean, wish him well. Just hope he doesn't end up in the division and flourishing, because we know that's only slightly frustrating. And on a side note too, I have to come clean, Jake, and say I didn't even realize that U of A played a football game last night, because ASU does not kick off their season until this Thursday. So I wasn't really watching too closely, but I don't hate the Kitties getting grubbed. So thank you for that nice little tidbit this afternoon, but looking forward to talking some Packers football for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. But unfortunately for college football, everything really got overshadowed last night with – I've been trying to refrain from using superlatives, but honestly, I mean, yes, there have been some odd stories and some shocking stories, some that have turned a little funny, some tragic, obviously. You know, Aaron Hernandez's situation, for example, comes to mind on that side of things. The situation that followed Manti Te'o on the lighter side of things, that was a little bit funnier. But really, I can't think of anything quite like this that has ever happened. I know people today are trying to say, oh, I saw this. You know, you could have seen this coming, but I don't think anybody did. And that is that Andrew Luck, one of the bright stars in the National Football League, one of the 10 best quarterbacks at minimum, 3 to 5 best quarterbacks in the league at maximum, decided that he no longer wants to go through his injury issues that he's – and, I mean, Andrew Luck has taken a beating over his short career in this time frame. He had a they listed his injuries the other night. There was a shoulder injury, obviously, a couple years ago that kept him out for the entire season, which was a strange situation all the way around. And it felt like we were traveling down the same path with his calf leg injury that really wasn't ever specified as to what exactly that it was that was bothering him. And then you go through some of the other injuries he's had. I mean, this guy has played through a lot of pain, including a lacerated kidney that had him pissing blood, which is crazy to me to think that anybody is questioning this guy's desire when he was willing to play when he was peeing blood. I'm not willing to get off of my couch. Now, thankfully, knock on wood, I've never been peeing blood, but I can promise you that if I was, I'm not going to work that day. There's no way. So I think that's a little crazy. But, Jason, I mean, just the overall landscape of the NFL, this is a team in the Indianapolis Colts that, I mean, next week when we do our season preview show, we'll find out – well, we were going to find out. Now it'll probably change quite a bit. But this was a team on my short list of non-Patriots AFC contenders that could potentially compete for a Super Bowl if Andrew Luck was healthy. Now – this changes not only the landscape of the NFC, or excuse me, the AFC South, but really the entire NFL. And just real quick before we get Eric in here, I don't want to keep him too long. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it was surprising. It came out of nowhere. That was really, truly shocking. I mean, we go from one end of the spectrum to the other. Not surprised at all about Josh Jones today. Absolutely floored by Andrew Luck. Now, when things like this happen, there's always some behind-the-scenes things that are going on that we don't know about, we may never find out about, or we may find out years from now what was really happening. There are several theories that have been floated around amongst my circle. I don't know that I want to get into some of those because they're not necessarily substantiated yet, but it's going to change the league. I mean, Andrew Luck is, you know, he's not even 30 years old, but we've seen a lot of players, and obviously not of the caliber of Andrew Luck and not a franchise quarterback, we've seen a lot of guys start to retire earlier. Some guys have left the game before they've even really got started. A lot of this, you know, they're choosing life over football. Luck, like you mentioned, the shopping list of injuries that he's had, you know, he's got a lot to consider. He's got a child on the way, I believe, or just recently had a child, and that's something you have to really ponder and consider. Me being the father of a young boy myself, I know that changed a lot of things for me 6 years ago when he was born, and I've learned a lot in the 6 years since. So I can be empathetic to that. It's Andrew Luck's decision to make. You know, the fan reaction to it was very interesting. You know, there were some fans booing him at last night's preseason game, and you know, fans have a right to express their thoughts however they want. We can have our own opinion about how they do it. But that's it. I don't really know what else to say. It obviously changes things for the Colts a lot. They're in the AFC, so it's not necessarily going to impact the Packers a ton. But, Jake, this might be a good time to bring our guest on because, you know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, you know, a long time ago, and Andrew Luck played a lot of football and had a lot of success. But I'm really curious to know what his thoughts are on this whole situation first and foremost before we get into the Packers rookies. And was there anything at all over the last couple of years that may have tipped this coming?
And let's do that. Eric Edholm is the name of our guest. He is from Yahoo Sports, NFL draft expert, analyst, and things of the like. I started talking to Eric a little bit, probably been about a month now, Eric, that we've been kind of going back and forth on just a few things, thoughts and stuff. I had read a couple of his pieces and kind of discovered is the wrong word, but learned of you in a more appropriate manner that way. But I also heard you on, I believe it was Adam Schein's radio show that you were on a few weeks back, and heard, or was it Adam Schein or was it the Mad Dog that you were on a few weeks ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've definitely done both at some point. I think it was Adam Schein, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I remember you reaching out to me after that, so that must have been what it was.
Yeah, that's got to be because I listen to that show just about religiously. So once I heard your name on it, I was like, that's really freaking cool. Let's see if we can figure out how to get you on a much less important show. So you just kind of heard Jason's bit here. First of all, introduce yourself. Who are you? Everything like that. And then kind of, yeah, tell us what are your thoughts here on really, I mean, honestly, the most shocking story in professional football that I can think of in the last, you know, 5 years.
Yeah, I mean – yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it, and more than happy to talk Packers. But as you pointed out, I mean, this is a stop you in your tracks kind of story. You know, I was shocked when I saw it yet last night. And yet, I think if you had asked me Saturday morning, you know, who would be five players, five star level players that you could envision walking away from the game, you know, in their prime, before their prime, prior to the age of 30, whatever the stipulations were, you know, had I sat down and thought about it, I probably would have come up with Luck. Maybe not the first guy I come up with, but probably not the fifth either. So I think from that standpoint, and reading some of his comments from the 2017 season, the ordeal, and I was there the day in camp that he was supposed to return to the field, and everybody's looking around, no Andrew, and then all of a sudden a couple of us ducked around the corner. We see him kind of throwing and not throwing very far and not throwing very comfortably inside the indoor portion of the facility. And, you know, he started asking around. 3 weeks later, it's an epidemic. You know, I mean, they don't have any solutions. He's not going to play, blah, blah, blah. So it certainly was an awkward deal then. And just to read Luck's comments about everything he went through, the dark places, you know, in his mind, you know, I don't know if he ever used the word depression, but you could certainly understand, you know, him facing some things that made him kind of question his love for the game at that point. Now, last year, comeback player of the year season, outstanding year, bringing the Colts back into contention. You know, I think a lot of people felt like it was almost like a whitewashing for him. You know, like, okay, great, I've tasted success again. I can do this. I'm at the peak of my powers again. You know, I don't know if the calf injury in and of itself is a career ender, right? We're not talking about you know, blowing up your knee or some other, you know, the shoulder re-aggravated or anything like that. But, you know, certainly there was a feeling that something was amiss, that something wasn't, that was a little bit off, right? Just identifying the injury. Was it a calf? Was it an ankle? Was there a fear of an Achilles injury in there? whatever it was, the mystery that surrounded it kind of gave everybody in our business, I think, a little bit of a what's going on here type of feeling. And so was it stunning once we sort of pieced things together a little bit? Probably not. But again, like as you pointed out, this one was as big and unexpected, I think, at the moment of an NFL story that I can remember. And I've been doing this, you know, a little while now.
Yeah, it's crazy. And like I mentioned, it kind of changes the landscape of the entire NFL. I don't know, Eric, what your thoughts were on the Colts as a whole, but I mean, I certainly thought if Andrew Luck was healthy and could play the level that he was last year or even, you know, a little bit better, that was something else that was certainly possible coming off the injury. I thought the Colts were, you know, I mean, obviously I kind of have this thought process every year that I go into the year of I'm picking the Patriots because why the hell wouldn't you pick the Patriots at this point in the AFC? And then you come up with a short list after that of, okay, so if this goes wrong for New England, or, you know, they don't win every single year, but if they don't, if they decide this isn't one of those years that they win, you know, the Chiefs are on that list, the Chargers, and then, I mean, the Colts were certainly a team that I thought could have been on that list. So this is a landscape changer for the entire NFL. And then when you get closer to it, obviously the NFL draft, because depending on how Jacoby Brissett plays and how everything goes, the Colts may very well be looking for, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, Jake Fromm, some of these quarterbacks that are going to be talked about probably ad nauseum between next Saturday and when the draft hits. But I don't really have a perfect way to segue from that. We're just going to jump right in here to the Packers rookie. So, Eric, I didn't really get a chance to introduce you all that well. So real quickly, just tell us, what is it you do for Yahoo Sports? Obviously, you're a journalist, but your expertise and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I was at Yahoo from 2013 to 2017, and I was, you know, covering everything NFL and then doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. What, you know, I did a lot of the draft stuff back then. I left for a couple of years and came back this past March. They rehired me into this sort of newly created role where the majority of what I'll be doing this year, and I don't know if it'll be 60, 70, 95, whatever percentage of my work will be draft related. So, you know, look, it's maybe not a 12-month obsession for even the most diehard of fans, but it's certainly the kind of thing that I think people are spending more time thinking about than they did a generation ago. And the interest in the draft has just exploded, as you both know as well. So trying to find ways, and obviously this is football season, a little easier than it was, say, in June, but trying to find a way to explore new ways to look at the draft, whether it's historical, whether it's looking forward, whether it's sort of doing an analytical approach or a scouting approach to players and teams, et cetera. So that's my job. And, you know, I'll still jump in and do some NFL stuff. If they need me to do anything else, I'm there. But the draft will be kind of a primary focus for what I'm doing at Yahoo.
Well, it's crazy to me to think that, an event that takes place in April, and it's literally just at the crux, it's the annual player selection meeting that teams have. And it is a 12-month-a-year obsession. I was listening to a podcast the other day. Pro Football Network has Tony Pauline and Cheesehead TV's Andy Herman on it, and they are talking strictly draft from now until whenever they decide, you know, probably the draft, and then they'll move forward to, you know, 2020 prospects, or that would be 2021 prospects in that case. So happy to see that. I'm, as somebody who likes the draft, I like to, you know, keep a macro touch on things during the season. Since I'm still a fan, I definitely like to keep that at a distance, because every year I go into the year hoping the Packers are picking 32nd. So players like, you know, players like Rashawn Gary, who they were able to draft last year because they were picking in the top 15, I'm hoping that those guys won't be available because they'll have won the Super Bowl. And that's really a good way to start here. So looking at Gary, it's really an interesting dynamic, something that maybe you could look into for one of your stories, is just the way that draft Twitter, if you will, and I don't really have a better name for this group of people, but draft Twitter did not like Rashawn Gary. The film people, the whoever, those analysts did not like Rashawn Gary. The NFL loved Rashawn Gary, consistently ranked in the top, you know, 5 to 7 of everybody's prospects, and those are boards that people make based on what they hear. So when you looked at Rashawn Gary, the Packers take him 12 overall. most of the fan base is up in arms because they didn't take Brian Burns or Montez Sweat or some of the other popular names in terms of pass rushers at that point in time. Gary was a guy who everybody said, oh, he got by on his athleticism, some claims that I find unsubstantiated about his work ethic were thrown out and about those things. He's come into camp, and you've seen some of the reasons they've picked him. The athleticism is there. The size is certainly there. But the production thus far through three preseason games, and I doubt he plays on Thursday night, has not been there. So what going into the draft, what were your thoughts on Gary? And when Green Bay picked him, was that something you were like, whoa, that just happened?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. I mean, I guess just to start, you know, fresh with Gary was when the first time I really noticed him, and I knew his name from, you know, we're talking about one of the elite high school recruits when he was coming out of New Jersey, ended up at University of Michigan. You know, so his name had been out there for a while, and obviously in the back of my head I knew who he was. But I really didn't notice him until I was actually looking at last year's, the 2018 NFL draft class. I was looking at, you know, Ohio State center Billy Price and other Big Ten linemen and things like that. And I kept seeing Gary flash from the 2017 season. And I have this little list that I make of – all right, the guys for next year, and let me timestamp some of these plays, these outstanding plays or these really bad plays, whatever. In the case of Gary, three or four times he just flashed off the screen like, whoa, you know, Price gave up one sack his entire season, you know, senior year. It was when Gary beat him on a twist inside. So, you know, it was one of those things that going into, let's say this time last year, I had him as kind of a top five potential guy. I didn't, you know, again, you never know. And obviously the results of his final year in college are going to have a big effect on where he ends up. But I think coming into last college football season, I had him as a potential top five, top 10 guy. He ended up 17th on my board. And that was probably higher. Regardless of position, overall rankings, that was probably higher, as you guys have said right now, than a lot of people had. I suspected someone would take a chance on him. You know, I mean, there were all these whispers about him, as you said, some, you know, sort of thinly veiled character questions and work ethic questions. And did he have a pass rush go-to move? And was he an elite electric edge guy? Or was he more of this bigger, more physical edge, just based on the way that they used him at Michigan too, where he'd kind of, you know, bench press the tight end and you know, close down, you know, edges and things like that. So, you know, it was hard to get to think of him as an elite prospect just because of some of the question marks, the production obviously there, you know, just the lack of kind of twitch, I think, in some of his game. Maybe he got too big, or maybe he was never going to be that, you know, kind of freaky edge explosion guy. But I still liked him. I thought, you know, he played with power. He had some violence in his hands. You know, he was able to play multiple techniques. You could stand him up. You could play him as a 7, a 6, or even maybe a 5 technique. I don't really think that's his best role, but you get the idea. I mean, I think he was sort of a somewhat of a chess piece. And I was just sort of looking at the teams that could consider him. Was Green Bay on the list? Yeah, but farther down, especially after they signed the two Smiths in free agency, I kind of thought, well, they've got their edge guys, and both those guys kind of fit the similar mold, I would say, to Gary in some respects. So I didn't – that wasn't where I had him going. So it was an interesting fit. But, I was obviously very curious to see how it would work out. And I obviously think it's too soon to make any vast judgments on him, but even with the, you know, the lack of preseason production so far.
Hey, Eric, it's Jason. Thanks for coming on. I was actually looking at if any of our – Twitter interactions in the past, and I found one from late last year. I think it was you were on it and Lindsey Jones is on it. I'll let you look it up. It's hilarious.
Okay.
Not really football related. It's a funny one though.
Okay.
Thanks so much for coming on.
For that,
I appreciate
yes.
it. So we'll kind of go in order here of the picks. So, you know, the Rashawn Gary is an interesting one to talk about. Those were some great thoughts. So the Packers moved back into, or they had a second first-round pick, and they ended up moving up to take safety Darnell Savage out of Maryland. We haven't really seen a lot of him this preseason. So I guess I'd want to start with the easy question, and it's kind of a multi-part question. So it's, what is Savage likely to give the defense most of right away? You know, can he finally be the cover safety this defense has been missing? And do you think that he was, in fact, the best safety in this draft class, worthy of being the first safety taken?
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting debate last year, because there wasn't that kind of Jamal Adams-like prospect or you know, even a Derwin James or whatever. I mean, it just wasn't that feeling of like, okay, this guy is far superior than anybody else. I think there were four or five players that, depending on the draft analysts or the NFL team for that matter, you know, when you asked them, who do you like at the top, you know, nobody was really kind of, there was no consensus, at least in my mind. I was a little late on Savage in the sense that I probably didn't really get him on my radar till the combine. And what I like to do, obviously, the combine workouts are part of the equation. We have to talk about them. They're, you know, it's TV that people watch and numbers that people can grasp and consume and all that. But one of the more interesting things that I remember talking to separate, one was a college scouting coordinator, one was an area scout, I think, who maybe had just been elevated at that point. I can't remember, to be honest. But, you know, both were in the rooms for their team interviews. Neither were the Packers, by the way, I should say that. But both were in the team interviews with Savage at the combine. And I think at that point, people were kind of getting him a little bit more on their radars, and maybe, you know, the rest of draft Twitter, it was just starting to kind of catch on to him a little bit. But they were both separately impressed with his ability to kind of understand coverages and break them down on the whiteboard, so to speak. And that there seemed to be kind of a maturity in him that everybody was, you know, really impressed with. You know, obviously a guy who runs well, as you pointed out, covers well. And I think that, you know, those things did stand out on tape. You saw some pretty nice production. You know, I know the interception totals weren't massive in college. I think he ended up with like three or four picks last year. But, you know, he's dangerous with the ball in his hands, really good athlete, has that football IQ. They played him in multiple spots. You know, they weren't just a, you know, two or three coverage team there either at Maryland. So, you know, all those things, you know, if you'd asked me in March, I probably would have guessed he was a top 75 pick. By April, you know, it became clear he was probably not getting out of round one. That was the consensus going into that Thursday night, you know, and people are sort of saying, we had to trade up for this guy. Well, yeah, because there probably were half a dozen teams interested in his service right behind where they were picking. So, you know, it made some sense. Well, obviously, as you pointed out, we don't really know at this point, but it does, correct me if I'm wrong, does still seem like they're kind of projecting him to be starting opposite Adrian Amos right away. So I'll be fascinated to see what, especially opening night, I'll be there in Chicago here. So, you know, I can't wait to see what he adds to that defense.
Yeah, he is projected to start. And I mean, they've pretty much entrenched him there from the first. He had that little spat with wisdom teeth. He had his wisdom teeth pulled right before camp, so he didn't start at that point. But he hasn't played a whole lot in the preseason, and the Packers haven't played a whole lot of their guys in the preseason. So they not only want him to start, but they want to protect him. And that's something that's interesting. The Packers clearly value him very highly. And Gutekunst said in his post-first-round press conference that he knew, quote, for a fact, that if Green Bay didn't trade up, they wouldn't have been able to pick him at 30. So that was interesting. Yep. Yeah, he was definitely a late-to-the-party kind of guy. You know, Eric, with one of our guys that we talked to, Cody Bauer, was the one who was the first one to point him out to me. And I was enamored right away. I was enamored immediately with him. So that was fun to watch. The second round of the draft was, I don't want to call this pick controversial, but because obviously there was some controversy with every pick. Everybody wishes this pick was somebody else or something else or whatever, but an offensive lineman and an offensive guard specifically isn't something that the Packers have. They haven't targeted players like that. It's been left tackles or blindside tackles that they've moved inside. Josh Sitton, TJ Lang, the list goes on and on of players they've picked like that. And Elton Jenkins was their second round pick. And it looks like he's in a competition with Lane Taylor to start at left guard. Now, the people that were upset with the Jenkins pick were because they wanted the Packers to pick a wide receiver. And I get it. Most of your average fans, sexy position, guy scores touchdowns versus boring guy who's got a blocker. You know, he's a blocker. I mean, quite frankly, if a blocker is good, it's not fun to watch for the average fan because it's just, oh, his name's never called. You know, he tackled guy or he keeps guys from tackling his quarterback. That's it. So with the Jenkins pick, it looks like if I had to put my money on it, you said you're going to be in Chicago. I would guess he starts week one at left guard. Is this somebody that Green Bay should feel really confident in? Because all of their reports coming out of camp on him have been very positive.
Yeah, I was a big fan. I mean, just for me personally, and again, I as I pointed out, Gary, I had 17th. I think Savage, I had somewhere in the, you know, mid-30s overall. You know, so those were both right about where I projected. But I had Jenkins. I thought he could have been, a late first. I thought maybe the Rams were interested in him, a couple other teams picking in that, you know, the Colts. There were some other teams that, you know, had done some extensive work on him. So, just in terms strictly of value, I love the pick. I thought it was a great spot for him. I heard those same things. People, you know, wide receiver, tackle, you know, maybe another position they would have preferred. So I thought it was a little unfair at first for fans to say that it was not the pick they hoped for because, you know, all I did was watch this guy go up against SEC competition every week and do a darn good job, whether it was guard or center and, you know, versatile player. You know, the whole blue collar thing, I believe he's one of those guys that may not have elite talent and skill level, but I mean, boy, he maxes it out. And I think that, you know, that versatility really helped him in college. It's allowed him to come in and possibly supplant a veteran for that starting job. And I think I'm with you. I just sort of get the feeling from afar. It's not like I've been up in Green Bay. I haven't talked to him in the last week or so, but it does sound like he's very much in the mix. And I think that, you know, just the last couple of years, the high-level tape he put out there, really good football player. The more I watched him, the more I appreciated him. He just seems really solid to me. So, you know, if you get a 6, 7, 8-year starter at that guard, to me, for a second-round pick, that's great. You take that every single day. So I was a big fan then, and I remain so.
Yeah, Jenkins has looked good. He looks the part. He's created a lot of buzz, and there's been a lot of questions as to whether or not he's going to be starting sooner than later, which is, like you said, that's a great problem to have. But you kind of also expect when you pick a guy that high that he's going to contribute sooner than later. I'm just glad that he is. The Packers have had a good run on certain positions, and interior offensive line seems to be one where they've gotten very fortunate in the middle rounds, and Jenkins being a second rounder. So far, everything looks good. So now we move into round three. The Packers took their first offensive skill player in tight end Jay Sternberger, and he's seemingly going to get early opportunities to play now that there's Jimmy Graham is dealing with a thumb injury. Mercedes Lewis has never really been a big pass catcher in this offense or at this point in his career, and Robert Tonyan is going to play as well, but Sternberger is going to get his opportunities if those two guys are really your primary pass catchers, and if Graham is limited. We haven't really seen any of Sternberger in game action because he took a huge hit in practice, the joint practice with the Texans. So he didn't have any stats in any preseason games. So here's another one. We haven't seen what he can do. But what I'd like to know is, again, what can we realistically expect to see his role be in this offense? Is he ever going to be able to be a tight end that plays with his hand in the dirt, or are we looking at more of an exclusive slot guy?
You know, the one thing I did like about him was that, you know, I mean, Jimbo Fisher runs kind of a, you know, whatever you want to call it, a pro-style offense. I don't even know what that means these days. But still, I mean, you know, more of the traditional NFL offense that we were used to prior to all the spread stuff kind of infiltrating the league. You know, you saw him blocking with effort. I mean, not always effectively, but willingness to do so. Seemed like he had a little bit of a physical edge to him. So I thought he could had a chance to be that inline guy, just like I thought Noah Fant, different player. But, I mean, you know, both guys showed enough improvement and effort in the blocking department to make me think that they could absolutely be serviceable or maybe even better in that department with time. So, you know, I saw Sternberger as, you know, tight end's one of those positions anyway that it seems like there's a bit of a slow learning curve for. You don't see a whole lot of rookie standouts. Maybe they're good at one thing or the other. Maybe they contribute on special teams. But it does feel like that's kind of a 2 or 3 year development position. And, you know, quarterback obviously is one, corner might be another. But still, that one, it takes a little while. That's why you don't see teams draft that many tight ends typically, because you know, it's kind of a slow burn there. So, and it was with him too. I mean, look, he spent the first year at Kansas, right? And then went to junior college, and then 1 year, and he got all this attention recruiting, comes to Texas A&M, leaves early. You know, he's been a few places now, and I think this is essentially going to be, I don't want to call it a redshirt year, but I think, you know, with Tanyan emerging and a fascinating guy, Jimmy Graham's still there, you know, it would seem like, you know, depending on the numbers they keep at tight end, he could end up being that third or fourth guy who doesn't see the field a ton. But I love his upside. I think he can attack the seam. He's got some, you know, a little bit of separation ability. He's got that good radius and tough to bring down too. I mean, he was dragging some DBs on film, and you saw him get a little bit physical at the end of his catches and stuff. And so there was enough of him for me to like him as one of the more sort of fascinating tight ends in this group, even if the transition's not going to be instantaneous, and I suspect it'll take him a little longer to get on the field than some other guys in this Packers class.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I mean, the injury that he suffered on the hit in the joint practice against the Texans has kind of thrown some of how much can he produce, because he hasn't played in a preseason game. He didn't play last week, even in Winnipeg. It wasn't in Oakland. It was in Winnipeg, which I got a whole lot of stuff to say about that, but that's beside the point. Packers didn't have a fourth round pick. They go to the fifth round and they take Kingsley Keke out of the SEC. And one of the interesting thoughts that I had with Keke was watching his tape against Elgton Jenkins, because they faced off against each other. This is a guy who, the first thing I noticed is from the waist down, he's just a really wide human. Like he's like the same size from his shoulders all the way down. I don't know how else to really explain that. But he has been probably the Packers' most productive rookie in the preseason. He's blowing up runs. He's rushing the passer. Doesn't have a sack yet, but he's come close a couple different times. It's one of those – something with pass rushers that I always think of is I remember when Kevin Green got elected into the Hall of Fame, Brett Favre told this story about how when he was facing Kevin Green, you could feel him, like, swipe against the back of you, and then he would whisper to the quarterback, or, like, say to the quarterback, "I'm getting closer." And that's kind of what the case has been with Keke. It's a great story. If I can find a video, I'll send it to you sometime. But it's a great story. Keke's one of those players who I'm not quite sure. I mean, obviously they have Kenny Clark and they have Dean Lowry, Lowry's a good player. Kenny Clark is a great player. And then the guys after that, I mean, there really is an opportunity for Keke to earn some playing time, because they released Mike Daniels. Montrevious Adams is there, but he hasn't exactly been a pinnacle of consistency since Green Bay got him. He's had a good preseason, but again, he hasn't done anything in a game that counts. And until he does that, you're going to remain skeptical, obviously, in that regard. But is this a player that when Mike Daniels was released, they put him, like I said, front and center? Is this a player that Green Bay could potentially be looking at counting on in year one?
I think so. And I mean, as you pointed out, the names you just mentioned, I mean, look, Clark, star, right? But you have to rotate on the defensive line. You just signed Lowry to the extension. We know he's going to be in some kind of a significant role. You hope Adams is part of that. I don't know. I mean, what is it, like Tyler Lancaster? I mean, I don't even know, you know, who else might make this roster. I think Keke at this point is in. I think he's got a roster spot. You know, maybe not sewn up, but I think in darn good shape at this point, barring an injury or something like that where you have to put him on IR. But, yeah, I would think that he's a part of this rotation. And so, you know, I like the fact that he played tackle, he played end in college. You know, he dropped some weight, seemed to be effective moving around and still keep kind of his mass. And, you know, they had him moving up and down the line a little bit. And there were some flashes there. He was one of those prospects, though. The reason I think he slid to the round, what was it, round five, he said? Yeah. So there were teams in the league that were really intrigued by him, but couldn't quite figure out what to make of him. And I think there were some teams that didn't really care for him as much. There was a little bit of a wide range in opinions on him, but the more I kind of figured out what he was, the more I felt comfortable with him as a day three prospect, but somebody who was, I thought, definitely getting drafted. It wasn't like there was, in my mind, any question that he wasn't, you know, a top 150 or 200 pick. It just wasn't consistent enough in college to make me think that, okay, this guy is instant coffee. He's just going to go in, you know, pretty high or anything like that. So, yeah, I think, you know, based on what you guys have said and what everything that I've heard and read, it sounds like he's in great shape on this team right here. And he may end up being one of those surprise contributors in year one just because of his performance and his versatility and maybe a little extra juice that we didn't necessarily think was there prior to the draft.
Yeah, I always love these mid-round success stories. It just kind of makes you feel good about your team. And Brian Gutekunst and his staff, or a lot of them have been there for a long time, even through the Ted Thompson years as GM, but it makes you feel good about the eyes that are looking on future talent, and they're able to find some of these guys in the middle rounds that can actually contribute. Because now we're starting to get into kind of the back half of the draft, and these are guys that if they're contributing on your team, even in special teams, you're lucky. They might even be practice squad. Sometimes they don't even make the roster. So we get to cornerback Kadar Holman, and this is a guy who I absolutely expect to make this roster. He's making this team. I don't see how he doesn't. I want to make that clear right away to my preamble there. But he has played a lot. So we finally do have a player here who we do have some decent tape on. He showed well. I know that a couple of the plays that he's made have been easier throws. And again, you're playing against guys that are also fighting for roster spots and are probably not going to be playing in the NFL this year. But while I say that, I also have always maintained that regardless of the situation, when there's a play there to be made and you make it, that's a positive, right? I mean, whether it's you're playing against fourth stringers or first stringers, you still got to make the play, because we've seen plenty of guys not make plays that were, you know, how many DBs get a ball, hit them right off the numbers, and then, you know, it's a game changer. You know, just ask, you know, Kyle Fuller how he feels about last season in the opener against the Packers, right? So,
yeah.
Kadar Holman has showed well, and he seemed to carry a leadership role at Toledo. So you'd like to see him grow into that as a pro. You assume he's going to be with the Packers for a couple of years. Are we looking at a guy who can fill in both outside and in the slot? Or is he a corner where you see a particular area of strength that the Packers really should hone in on, just speaking about him specifically as a corner?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably didn't see enough of him in college. As much as I love the MAC, I'm not even kidding when I say that. I actually have a soft spot for that conference and find it kind of fascinating on some level. But it's hard for me to really say one way or the other, okay, he's definitely this or he's definitely that. What I do know about him is that even as an older prospect, I think he might turn like 25 this year. I'll double check that on me, but he might be 24 now and he turns 25 soon. So he's an older rookie. I mean, this is somebody that, you know, obviously is a little bit outside the typical age range, but you know, his backstory is great in the sense that nobody wanted him coming out of high school. He has that, you know, he'll always have that chip on his shoulder, no matter whether he plays for one team in his career or eight teams. You know, he's one of those guys that is always fighting his way onto a team or not. I don't know what his future holds, but I do know that I think he's the type who will do whatever it takes. I really believe that. Just talking to some of the MAC coaches about him, they felt like he was one of those useful players that was always trying to make himself better. So he's got that going for him. And I think his pro day was the biggest shocker of all, in the sense that, you know, maybe at times you didn't necessarily think he was an elite athlete, but he tested like an elite athlete at his pro day. And so that, for me, you know, kind of enhanced his prospects a little bit. And I just sort of felt like that made him eminently draftable despite, you know, some of the perceived limitations in his game. So, yeah, I mean, if most teams keep at least five, if not six corners, I would think he's probably got a great shot at one of those spots. I don't know that he would clear waivers with all the teams looking for any kind of quality DB help. That's one of those positions that are, you know, everybody's scraping and scrounging for. So Yeah, I think your instincts are pretty good on that. Again, I haven't been able to sit there and drill down on him and say, okay, he's for sure an outside corner, or he can do both, or he's more of a nickel. I wouldn't want to go on the record and say that I feel strongly one way or the other, but from everything I know about him, he's really made a good impression.
Somebody that we hoped was going to make a good impression and kind of jump into this backfield was Dexter Williams. And this is one of those picks where when it comes to the draft, I mean, I have a much less access to information and such than someone like you has, Eric. But so I don't try to pretend that I'm smarter than everybody else. Say, oh, Green Bay could have picked this guy in the third round and it would have been, you know, even better. But at the same time, Dexter Williams was somebody who I watched him play the first game of the season last year against Michigan, and then obviously watched him play on tape throughout the course of the year with some of his highlight, you know, films and stuff like that. So that's something that jumped out on the page to me, was that as soon as the Packers hired Matt LaFleur and they're thinking outside zone scheme, run, you know, one cut and go kind of runner, and Dexter Williams fits that to a T. So when they drafted him, I was incredibly excited as someone that, you know, I was hopeful could even potentially supplant Jamal Williams as the team's second running back after Aaron Jones, who I think has potential to be a star in this league. But Jamal Williams just doesn't have the explosion. I think he's a nice role player. But Williams, I thought, had a chance to at least give them another dynamic runner in the running game. And it just hasn't really worked out a ton in Green Bay so far. The way he runs, you can see the potential. The one cut and go, he sticks his foot in the ground and he runs, and that's great. The problem that he's running into is he is an absolute zero factor, and honestly a negative factor, in the passing game. His pass blocking issues, which he wasn't asked to protect a ton in college, so that's learning something new for him. And catching the ball has been a disaster. There was a practice last Sunday, I believe is when it was, and he had a throw in the flat, and Rodgers hit him, and he could have run for probably 30 yards, maybe even scored on the play, and he dropped the ball. And Matt LaFleur, who, I don't know how much you've watched Matt LaFleur speak, but he seems like the nicest guy ever. Like, he could never say anything mean to anybody. And he eviscerated Dexter Williams, just completely undressed him, kicked him out of the drill, everything. Like, I mean, get the F out was what somebody said that he stated to him in the middle of the drill. So he kicks him out of the drill, and Dexter Williams has been running behind Trey Carson. And with all due respect to Trey Carson, but there's just not a lot of juice there. Not a lot of plays that are going to get you excited. He's kind of a plotter in that regard. Maybe something that changes when he starts playing behind some of the better blockers. I mean, as the third string running back, I'm sure you can imagine he's playing behind guys that aren't ready to play professional football at this point in time. But nonetheless, with Dexter Williams, I mean, you can't really be disappointed, I guess, in a sixth-round pick. But is this somebody who, I mean, what were your thoughts on him coming out of school? And does he have the ability to adapt and become a player in the passing game?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I have people that I'm tight with in the Notre Dame program, and I've talked to them about, you know, dozens of prospects over the last several years, whatever. And, you know, they kept kind of wanting to like him. I guess that's the best way I would say, you know, he had some off the field stuff. He had some growing up to do. I think that's a good way to kind of, to characterize it. And, you know, people say character questions. Yeah, that's true. I think it was probably mostly maturity and responsibility and those sorts of things. So the talent has never really been a question with him. Although, as you point out, you know, those receiving and third down shortcomings were pretty evident at times in school too. Some of this might be mental too. I really feel like, you know, just based on things that conversations I've had with people about him, you know, there may be a concern about that he takes hard coaching differently than other people do, that he can get up in his head a little bit about missed assignments and things like that. So all that considered, I mean, you still saw the juice, the burst, and the explosion. Sometimes he showed some really good patience and vision as a runner, that it was enough to think, okay, first of all, he's getting drafted. I didn't see a scenario where he wouldn't get picked unless he flunked some of those character tests worse than I was aware. So, I thought he went about where he should have gone. I know other people were higher on him. I just felt like there were enough red flags where he was definitely going to be a day three guy and more likely on the back half of that. So that they got him about where I thought. And yet, like you said, I thought like a change of scenery would be good for him. The right coaching staff. Yes, they'll be demanding people. Aaron Rodgers is going to be one of them. I didn't know how tough Matt LaFleur was going to be as a coach. But, you know, I kind of felt optimistic, especially when you thought, geez, there just isn't a lot of depth at that position in Green Bay. So they need some help there, right? I know it hasn't worked out well. I don't know if he would get claimed. I suspect the Packers will look for other options. Maybe you can, you know, swing a small trade for somebody to throw in there. Like you said, I'm not a believer that Trey Carson is really an NFL running back or a great one anyway. So, you know, you can only go off the preseason stats so much, but they do tell a story, right? He hasn't really shown much in terms of burst and acceleration. And yet, if you feel more comfortable about Carson than you do about Williams, you know, that kind of tells you all you need to know, that he's a talented kid who still has some work to do to become an NFL player.
Well, the Houston Texans need a running back, so obviously Dexter Williams for Jadeveon Clowney, and who says no?
Right. Lock it in. I think it's a fair trade.
Okay, so rounding out the draft. And at this point, you know, we're talking about late rounders, we're talking about the seventh round now. And Eric, I think you would agree, you know, being somebody who looks at these things more in depth, way more in depth than I do, that when you get into this space here, teams are, you know, they're looking for the athletic traits. They're looking for a guy who may not even necessarily come in and play the position that he played in college. You're just looking for the, you know, take a flyer. And the Packers seem to have gotten what I think could turn into a really good pick here in linebacker Ty Summers. But he's been one of the most up-and-down players, not just rookies, but he's been one of the most up-and-down players on the Packers roster this preseason. You know, what his pedigree says that he's usually going to be around the ball. That's what I see from him. I like his vertical speed back and forth. He's got game speed. You know, you've got a guy here who goes from missing a ton of tackles 1 week to being the team's leading tackler the following. So I guess my question is, you know, why has he been so hot and cold? Is that something that's not surprising to you, somebody who might have been looking at what he did in college? And how big of a steal might the Packers be getting? Because that inside linebacker spot now seems to be a position of need with a couple guys getting hurt. You got Oren Burks out for a while. Curtis Bolton's going to miss a bunch of time. And they need somebody to kind of fill in there in that inside linebacker spot.
Yeah, no, I mean, Summers was an interesting prospect in the sense that, you know, he sort of passed the eye test. I think a lot of people felt like maybe his instincts and some of the finer points of linebacker play were going to be a little bit slower to develop, and that just wasn't, you know, where he was as a prospect coming into the draft. So I didn't really have a great feel for where he was going to go. I thought maybe a little bit earlier than that, but, yeah, it was clear, I mean, just watching him, that he was sort of a flawed player, but I mean, he tested really well, high motor. You know, you saw all the stuff on tape where it was like, okay, yeah, there's a football player in here for sure. Now, the missed tackles, no, I've read about them and seen them and everything. And so that's obviously kind of right in line with that there's a little bit of a rawness to it, to his game that makes you kind of realize that, okay, you know, we're not going to put him out there in any kind of major position year one, but yeah, I mean, obviously with Bolton's injury and everything, I could see him sliding into a spot there that could be a rookie-heavy team this year. He's got the right temperament and athleticism to play special teams and, you know, be a two-position backup if he needs to. So there's a lot to like about him. I think he's always going to be a little bit frustrating on some level that he can't ever quite put it all together as a player. But, you know, not somebody I've done extensive work on, but I obviously knew of him from college, watched enough of him to get a good feel for him. And, you know, without having broken down his tape this summer, I would still say everything you just said is not shocking to me. That's about the player that we saw in college, somebody who you want to like a little bit more than you do, but you're never going to hate him. There's enough there to kind of feel like, okay, he's going to give you some effort. He's got the athleticism to make it in this league. Will he ever be a standout player? I don't think so. I never really felt that way watching him, but I did feel like he had a shot.
definitely interesting to watch. Eric, want to thank you first and foremost for your time today, coming on and talking with us about some of the rookies and such. Real quick, I know you do some NFL stuff. Next week is our season preview show. I don't want to lock you into a specific number, but I will ask. I have two questions, and I'll start with the Packers. The first one is, do the Packers get back to the playoffs in 2019?
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I'm going back and forth, and obviously, like, with the luck news, it's a good reminder that maybe you don't, you know, chisel your predictions into stone or anything like that until the late last possible moment. But, you know, I'm kind of toying with the idea of picking either the Packers or the Vikings to win the division. I you know, maybe I'm a little bit more sort of rose-colored glasses on the young defense, and if they get a little lucky with injuries being on the lower end, that they can make some pretty good improvements in that area. And, you know, if Aaron Jones can emerge the way everyone kind of hopes and expects he can, and those, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown and Marquez Valdez-Scantling and some other young pass catchers kind of raise their games too, this is still an Aaron Rodgers-led team, and I don't care that there's a first-year head coach, and I don't care that the Bears won 12 games a year ago. Everything changes. So, yeah, it's a tough division. I don't think the Lions are going to be a joke. I don't think the Bears are going to be as tough as they were a year ago. I don't think Minnesota is going to be worse than they were a year ago. So there's still good competition 1 through 4. But I'm kind of leaning towards picking Green Bay right now. But please don't hold me to that, because I just told you I could change my mind at any minute, you know. So.
Well, and he also talked about Andrew Luck. So if Aaron Rodgers retires tomorrow, everybody that listens to the show, you know who to blame. It's at Eric_Edholm.
That's right. So I want to hear from all of you, too.
There you go. So before we sign you off, you said you might be picking Green Bay. This is even harder than who's playing in the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy. I mean, I am that's a great question. I'm not picking the Chargers because they'll have another devastating injury any moment now. As talented as they are, I just can't do it. I've learned the hard way on them. I'm thinking the Saints kind of regress. So, you know, that's a Super Bowl contender. We talked about the Colts earlier. I want to pick the Eagles because I think they have a tremendous roster. But we're one snap away from Josh McCown playing extensively. So that scares the heck out of me. I don't know. This is a really tough call. It would be easy to just say New England and be done with it on the AFC side. But Chiefs, they're legit. And if Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu keep – doing what they're doing and raise the level of that defense, even, you know, by one or two notches, I really think they've got a shot this year. So just, it's tough. I'll go Chiefs Eagles right now. It's kind of my, you know, written in soft pencil kind of pick, but obviously Patriots wouldn't stun me. I could see an NFC North team emerging in that race if all things go right. And, you know, ask me again in 2 or 3 weeks and I'll give you a better answer.
Eric, that was awesome. Eric has taught us all how to perfectly hedge. I thought I was good at it. That was phenomenal. It's been, hey man, it's. I know Jake's going to send you off, but I just want to say thanks. Also, thanks for coming on. It's been great chatting rookies, and thanks for all your great insight.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, so there you have it, Eric. Hedging your bets perfectly. I will say, if that Super Bowl does happen, that would be the Andy Reid Bowl, and
yes.
I spent a lot of time rooting for the Eagles when I was like 10, 11, 12-ish, the Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb era. And the Eagles are kind of like the team that I secretly root for because my dad is an Eagles fan. So that would be one that I guess could have me a little conflicted. But I would love that to see that. But you didn't pick the Packers, so unfortunately we have to kick you off the show. But thank you for joining us, obviously. We can find your work. It's at Eric_Edholm, which is Edholm. I look forward to reading your insights throughout the course of the season, NFL draft stuff, and then Yahoo Sports. And then is there anything else that I missed there that you want to make sure that we know before you take off?
Yeah, just that I'm incredible in the kitchen, uncommonly handsome, unbelievably funny, and, you know, and my wife loves me more than anybody in the world. Other than that, it's nothing big.
Right. So as far as that goes, Eric, I will say as a joke between the two of us, she's not going to. So
okay.
That is what I will leave. That is what I will leave you with. Thank you for coming on, Eric, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
All right, fellas, take it easy. Thank you.
All right, that was Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports. I want to thank him for giving us some of his time today. Jason, that took a little bit longer than I anticipated here. So let's kind of, we got through Josh Jones. We got through Andrew Luck. Let's talk a little bit. It's been a couple days, obviously, since they played the Oakland Raiders in Winnipeg. First of all, the first thing I want to be made very clear is that John Gruden is full of crap. I think anybody who pays attention to football knows that now. But John Gruden is full of crap. The whole idea that nobody in Oakland had a problem with the field and it was just the Packers. And it's very simple, guys. John Gruden didn't play any of his starters either. If he didn't have a problem with the field, then his guys would have played and he would have proceeded with a normal plan, just like he would have if Green Bay was playing their starters. Second of all, why the hell wasn't that game just played in Green Bay? The NFL, if you're listening, Roger Goodell, and I know you are, I beg of you, please, please stop. Just stop trying the international stuff. I don't care. I mean, if you want to send people to London, at least we know that that field is in decent shape. But otherwise, I just don't give a damn. Like, and those people don't either. There was nobody at that game. Nobody bought tickets. They don't care about, and they especially don't care about preseason football. Last year you had the debacle in Mexico City to where the Rams and the Chiefs, it was the best game of the season, had to be moved back to L.A. because they saw that the field was garbage. This happens way too often. Now, I know that there are some fields in the NFL that are current NFL stadiums that are not up to snuff as far as the surface. I'm looking specifically in Pittsburgh and Chicago in particular for those things. But it's ridiculous that this game was played and that we've known about this game being in Winnipeg for months now and that this was even a discussion. The NFL, honestly, it's disappointing. It's crazy to me that you have this cash cow. Being commissioner of the NFL should be the easiest job in the world because you're going to make money hand over fist. People love your product, and you can, Roger Goodell continuously finds a way to bubble, stumble, and screw up some of the easiest things that could be done. It's very simple, guys. Oh, that field in Oakland's not playable? Put the game in Green Bay. Okay, so the Packers get a third preseason game. Figure out something to do with the money. Make sure Oakland gets their cut. But nobody cares about a third preseason game and where it's played. But make sure it's on an NFL field because, honestly, we're lucky. Because can you imagine if, obviously, as soon as they saw the field, Matt LaFleur did the right thing, sat all of his starters. But can you imagine if that game was played and Devontae Adams blew his knee out because the field was substandard? Or if Antonio Brown wasn't being a crazy person and did all that and played and blew his knee out because the field was substandard? Or even worse yet, Aaron Rodgers or Derek Carr were to hurt themselves because the field was substandard? It was ridiculous. And it puts the coaches in an impossible position because LaFleur, and I'll keep it on the Packers side of things, has to sit all of his guys and basically tells, okay, these 33 guys are more important than you are. Now, we know that to some degree that is obviously true. But the field isn't good enough for these guys to play. And honestly, if the field wasn't good enough for those 33 to play, it wasn't good enough for the other 40-plus guys either, 50-plus guys. It was ridiculous in every sense of the word that this game was played in Winnipeg, and then once the field was deemed unplayable in some spots, it was a freaking clown show. And the Winnipeg press is the only one that really had the balls to call people out about those things. So, Jason, did you have any comments, thoughts on the surface that was played upon?
It was bad. It was obviously really bad. I don't think the coaches were put in a tough spot at all. It was very easy. You don't play anybody because it's stupid. It was a bad move, and I think either one of those head coaches is absolutely getting just chided and will never live it down if they had played any of those other key players and they had gotten hurt. It's life in the NFL. If you're somebody who's fighting and trying to make this team, you got to play the scrub games and the scrub minutes. Now, this wasn't what week three of the preseason typically is, but it quickly becomes that when the league does what it does. They keep trying to stuff their product down the throat of fan bases and markets that aren't really that interested in them. And this is, to me, just another example of the NFL, you know, years ago Mark Cuban said the NFL was becoming hoggish, and this is a perfect example of that. You know, him, they're taking their own agenda and putting it ahead of everything else. And instead of just canceling the game, I mean, they canceled the Hall of Fame game over paint on at the midfield mark a couple of years ago. So this field isn't fit to play on, but you're going to play the game, you know, and it's, I think it's only because it was in Canada, but they've known about it for so long that it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the venue. It's embarrassing for the NFL. So that's really it. I mean, at this point we've heard a million and one different renditions of it, but it does, it disappoints me as somebody who knows that I'm not going to stop watching football. I love my team. I love watching the game, but this is an egg in the face thing. And it's one of those things where, yeah, I watch and yeah, I love the product, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that I love the league. And this absolutely did nothing to endear, for them to endear themselves to me at all.
No, it's unfortunate because, you know, the stuff, as far as on-field product, the NFL is still the king. It's my favorite thing in the world. And when it's just the on-field stuff, I love it. It's all the other crap that comes with it that makes it incredibly frustrating. So that's where we're at as far as the preseason goes. Aaron Rodgers hasn't played. He's not going to play. That is perfectly acceptable to me. I think the rust versus rust stuff, honestly, Aaron Rodgers could have played every snap of all four preseason games, and the offense was still more likely to struggle than it was to light up the scoreboard on the first week of the season because, one, they're playing the Chicago Bears. Two, it's a new head coach versus a team actually game planning against them. I think Aaron Rodgers has said it best in the fact that the best reps that he gets during the preseason are in practice because Mike Patton is throwing the kitchen sink at him. And these defensive coordinators, they're running, okay, man-to-man, cover two, rush four, cover with seven, and the Packers are running, you know, slant flat just to invoke old memories and stuff like that. Nothing real specific in terms of things that are schemed and planned and things of that nature. So I don't have a problem that Aaron Rodgers hasn't played in the preseason. I don't want to beat that line to death because I think it's been talked about a lot. But Jason, something that else that emerged, and I think the biggest thing that emerged from the last game was the presence of Trevor Davis. And this is somebody who he's been, according to pretty much everybody that's watched the entire offseason program, OTAs, voluntary minicamps, training camp, whatever. When Trevor Davis has been on the field, which has been all for everything except for the 2 weeks after he got hurt against Houston in the joint practices a couple weeks back, Trevor Davis has been the best player in camp. And he's somebody that I've made some waves with my personal opinions in that, one, I think Darius Shepherd has done enough to make this team. And now, granted, I said some of this when everybody was healthy. Equanimeous St. Brown is not healthy at this point. But when everybody was healthy, I said that Darius Shepherd, I believe, deserved to make the team. Jamon Moore has not deserved to make the team. Obviously, I don't think all that that's all that controversial at this point. But after that, the receivers I would have kept are Davante Adams, MVS, EQ, Jake Kumerow, Darius Shepherd, and Trevor Davis. And I left out Geronimo Allison. Now, you can take one of Geronimo Allison or Jake Kumerow, and those are the guys. I would cut one of them and keep somebody that I just think has the higher upside because you're looking at the back end of your receiver depth chart. I just don't see the upside in terms of Geronimo Allison. Now, I'm not saying that I think the Packers will do this because I don't. I think they'll figure something else out on how to keep Geronimo Allison, and I imagine that'll involve Shepherd getting cut. But I'm not sure how that's all going to shake out. Those are the questions that, thankfully, I don't have to answer at this point in time. Brian Gutekunst does. But Davis was, again, continuing the trend of best player on the team in those terms. He was the best player on the field against the Oakland Raiders the other night. He touched the ball six or seven times, played very well all over the place, and is kind of that rotational chess piece that Matt LaFleur is going to enjoy using. And honestly, I know MVS has the deep speed and that we've all talked about, but Trevor Davis's deep speed is a little bit more sudden. It's kind of similar to somebody, Trevor Davis, for example, for those of you guys that are into track, and I had somebody, I was in Toledo over the week and had a track coach explain this to me. There are fast guys who run the 50 and there are fast guys who run the 400. The fast guys who run the 50 get up to top speed the fastest. Trevor Davis is somebody that runs the 50, and MVS is somebody that runs the 400. It just takes him a little bit to get going as far as getting all the way up to full speed. I think those are added elements to this offense. I think there's a sudden change of direction that can be added by Trevor Davis being on the field. And quite honestly, I'm intrigued by during the season potentially having a receiving group that includes Devontae Adams and MVS on the boundaries and Trevor Davis in the slot to just threaten defenses down the field and see if that's something they can do. And not only that, I maintain, and I have since the beginning of camp, Trevor Davis is the best returner on this team. I think if they played on a field that was NFL worthy, he would have housed that first punt that he got to return the other night. This is a guy who he's been the best player when healthy. Now, obviously, when healthy matters, but if they're finding a way to keep him off the roster, it is projecting health that he just simply hasn't had in his career, and I don't think that's something they'll do. I think he belongs on this roster. Jason, you've been a skeptic, I think is the nice way to put that. What say you?
So, Davis, yeah, I mean, better to have him do better and actually show up than not, because you want the veteran on the team that knows the offense and is a special teams contributor. So it's better late than never that he shows up. Now, again, he's playing against guys that are not his normal level of competition. But, again, he's making plays and he's doing as well as he should. He is making these guys look foolish. He's making plays at receiver. He's doing well in returns. I think the biggest thing is, can he stay healthy? But at this point, with EQ going down, they need Davis, and I think I'd rather have Davis on the team than not. If EQ is healthy, then okay, we could maybe talk about it, because Shepard has shown that he can play, and I do think that he's going to be on this roster. Darius Shepard will, when they make their final cutdowns. So we'll see how that whole thing shakes out, but I still say it's a good thing, and I'm fine with it. I mean, I haven't been a big Trevor Davis fan, but that's just because he hasn't really fit in. And when you had other guys that were doing well during the days when Jordy Nelson was here playing receiver, Trevor Davis just seemed kind of like an odd man out. And then he just, he did a couple dumb things during the off season, last off season, and those things didn't endear him. So all that's a factor, but it's a good thing to see him playing well. That's going to be one position group that I still think is going to be the most intriguing to see how it shakes out in about a week's time after the last preseason game of the year comes and goes, which I'll be in the house for. I'll be there this Thursday at Lambeau Field when they take on the Chiefs. So it'll be interesting to see the bottom of the roster guys duke it out. But, I'm good. And there's another guy that I think Aaron Rodgers has at least some familiarity with, because we know that that's kind of what factors into his mind when he throws the football. And I think Trevor Davis should get some snaps at wide receiver this season. And so it's to have a guy actually finally pan out, even though it's three seasons later. They did invest a fifth-round pick in him. That's not a throwaway pick. That's good news all around, I think, that he's playing as well as he has this summer.
That'll be interesting to see. It's really the final version or the final part of this battle. It's been kind of up and down, all of camp. We've been looking at first it started with, they'll only keep five because of the emphasis on running the ball. And then it's all, can they keep six? Could they keep seven again? I mean, there's a lot of factors going at play here into this final preseason game, which I frankly am just thankful that it's almost over. I've always often thought that the preseason was a necessary evil for some of the back of the roster guys, and some teams do approach it a little differently. Baker Mayfield, for example, in Cleveland played almost a half Friday night against the Tampa Bay Bucks. A lot of the newer age coaches and the new coaches that are getting hired, they'll basically say it's not worth the risk. Sean McVay is one. Matt Nagy is one. Matt LaFleur quite clearly is one. I know that they could say that the plan was for Rodgers to play these last two games, but the reality is he hasn't. And, maybe that's something that'll change next season, but I don't know that it will. I really would like to see the NFL cut their preseason, because I do think some of those games and in a game atmosphere, it still matters for the young players. It still matters for guys, Chandon Sullivan, Darius Shepherd doesn't make this roster, if he does make the roster this year without the preseason, for example, the backup quarterback battle, DeShone Kizer and Tim Boyle, which some people think it's a battle. I'm still relatively skeptical that that's how it's going to turn out. But, you know, I don't want to climb down that rabbit hole today. But nonetheless, I do think it matters for – it just doesn't matter for the players that we want to see as far as fans go. And if the games are going to be just a slot fest joke, then, you know, a lot of people aren't going to want to watch them. And I think that what you can do is cut one exhibition game, cut two exhibition games, and have more joint practices. I know Aaron Rodgers said that he didn't like them, or, you know, just to sum it up, really, that he didn't, he hopes they never did him again kind of thing. But I do like the competitive portions of it. Now, granted, I'm not the coach, and my opinion doesn't really matter in these terms, but I do like the idea of competitive portions of practice and getting used to hitting somebody else and playing in competitive environments like that that are controlled, and you can do the one-on-ones, and you get valuable experience for guys like Jair Alexander to go up against DeAndre Hopkins and for Elgton Jenkins, excuse me, to face off against J.J. Watt. There's just a lot more, I think, that can be determined from a practice like that instead of two meaningless games that really just end up making everybody angry. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on shortening the preseason? I don't want to get into lengthening the regular season because I still maintain that that's not necessary, but that's a collective bargaining agreement issue. But should the NFL be looking at three or maybe two exhibition games?
Yeah, it's got to change. I don't want four. Four is too many. For those of you who follow the Pack-A-Day podcast group, Mark Eckel, who used to cover the Eagles for many years and covered the NFL for a long time, said that they are not going to have four preseason games next season, which is very interesting from somebody who knows what they're talking about, given also that the CBA, the negotiations and the contract is not up until after next season is over, unless I am mistaken. Until the 2020 season is over, they don't need to start negotiating that. So for the NFL to make that change, that would be kind of a big deal. It doesn't have to be a bargaining chip and something that comes out of a new CBA. That would be an NFL stepping in and saying, we need to make a change now. We're not waiting. So obviously the quality is bad. And if the league, again, I don't expect them to give a crap what you and I are saying, Jake, because they've proven that they don't listen to anybody. But if the league is going to handle preseason games the way they did this past Thursday in Winnipeg, then they should do themselves a favor and cut it down, because they're only going to face more and more criticism as time goes on if they're going to bungle simple things like getting a playing surface ready for an NFL game, especially at a stadium where NFL games are not played and in a stadium where a field is set up for a completely different type of game. So I'm all for – I've said, you know what? Let the teams give them a week, like maybe give the teams like in the second or third week of the preseason, like a bye week, and let the teams decide what they want to do. Cause you know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see the Packers bring family night back and actually make it a scrimmage, but make it controlled and put it in a controlled environment and make it safe and just be like, look, I don't care if you turn it into flag football on Lambeau Field, fans are going to fill that stadium. And I get that that's maybe not the case for the other 31 teams in the league, but let the teams have control. Give these players a break. Give them a chance to still get out there and exhibit what they've got in a safe and controlled environment, but you still get 1 week of something. I mean, it's about the money, but I'm tired of that. It's, you know, it's great. It's about the money, but then your product the first 4 weeks of the season and you know, and in other weeks of the season suffers, and then you've got a completely different dynamic from what one season could have been to what it ends up being, because guys are getting hurt, guys aren't playing, guys are retiring, all this other stuff that's going on. So that's my rant on that whole situation. I don't expect the NFL to listen or heed any of what you and I are saying, definitely not what I'm saying, but that's just kind of my take on it. Like give the control back to the teams and let them figure out a way to continue evaluating players and do something else on their own. Put the onus on the teams to make revenue for themselves and for the league and do something to make the fans happy. I mean, for crying out loud, fans pay enough money these days to go to games. So the teams can throw us one and you know, take a week and really put some thought into how they're going to give back and say thank you to the fan base.
that would require caring about the fans, which the NFL has shown over and over again. They do not. So I like your idea. I would like to see something like that put into place. But unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen either. Something that I would like to rebut real quick before we sign off here too, though, is the people that are like, oh, you know, they played, you know, they used to play six or seven exhibition games once upon a time. And, you know, when did we become so afraid of playing a football game and, you know, getting players? And players can get hurt regardless. And there's some truth to that. Obviously, players could be injured during the season, and your season can be ruined whenever. But at the same time, just for example, and the example was brought up by Bill Huber, who has his new podcast. It's called Packers Overtime. For those of you that don't like it or don't subscribe to it, go ahead and do that now. It's really good. Bill's got some really good insight, very analytical in terms of his analysis as far as the numbers and things of that nature. So that's something I think worth listening to. But the example he gave was 2015. Jordy Nelson's knee explodes in a 2015 contest against the Pittsburgh Steelers on that field. The Packers season, for all intents and purposes, was over. They weren't going to the Super Bowl, and their Super Bowl hopes ended in August instead of in January like you would hope. And I think that the mentality that the majority of these coaches have, Sean McVay said it best, it's not worth the risk for me to put my guys out there now. And Sean McVay did the same thing last year, and his team went to the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying that that's like a foolproof system. Obviously, we know that the Rams had some fortune break their way. But, I mean, any team who goes to the Super Bowl is going to need some fortune to break their way throughout the course of a season like that and in the playoffs. But what I would say to all that is, just sitting here, I would like to at least give my season a chance. Like Aaron Rodgers, for example, yeah, he could, knock on wood, he could tear his ACL week one against Chicago. He could also have torn it if he played a preseason game 3 weeks earlier. I still would prefer to at least give him the chance to be healthy and have a fighting chance to get through the season healthy than to just have it all end in August when the season's over, and the season's over before it even begins. So that's where I'm at with that. Jason, I'm with you. Bring family. If family night was real, you know, I sit back and watch family night now. Well, I watch it until the streams get caught and thrown out the window, but that's beside the point. You know, I like to watch family night. I would like to go to family night, you know, as soon as my daughter's old enough to.
And once again, we have lost Jake. We lost Jake. He dropped off. Technical issues. We're running out of time here. And Jake, are you back?
I have no idea how the hell that happened. That's never happened before.
You dropped off while you were agreeing with my fantastic idea about making family night a thing again. So please, please do carry on.
Yeah, bring family night back. Make it a real thing. Make it a real scrimmage. You can still make it a controlled environment, but make it an actual first team. You know, I wasn't really paying a ton of attention at the time when family night was a full-blown scrimmage and how they could format it, but go ahead, format it. Twos versus twos, ones versus ones. Does the offense beat the defense at the end of the day? You can do it thud up top, blow the whistle, everything like that, but that, to me, would be more entertaining than charging people to come to practice, essentially doing the same damn practice and throwing fireworks at the end and calling it family night. Now, it's still a cool thing. It's still an awesome event, but it could be better. And that's what I think we should be looking for. So my solution, and I will fix the entire NFL right now, cut your exhibitions to two games. They can play two games the last 2 weeks of the preseason now. So, you know, these last 2 weeks here would be when your games are. Joint practices the first 2 weeks with teams that aren't on your regular season schedule. So if, you know, Green Bay could get the Cleveland Browns, for example, to come in just because it's relatively local, you're probably not going to have teams willing to travel from here, there, everywhere on those sorts of trips. But get the Packers and the Browns together for week one and then the Bengals in week two, just for example. And then after that, they'll play the Raiders and the Chiefs or whoever it is that they play in the, you know, the last 2 weeks of the preseason. Bring family night back before everything and make it an actual event instead of throwing these games out there to paying customers. And I think this would help your customer base too, because I've heard it from the paying customers in terms of guys that have season tickets, is when I buy my season tickets, I have to pay full price for two preseason games, that there's no way I'm making my money back on those games because nobody wants them. And I can't blame them for not wanting them, because for me, for example, when I was local, if I lived in Green Bay, going to preseason games wasn't a huge deal for me because it was just a drive down the stadium. And for the most part, I could get my tickets for free, essentially. So that wasn't a big deal for me to go. But now for me to go, I'd have to pay $30, $40, you know, for a ticket. And then you add in gas and 3 hours trip. And sometimes if it's, you know, a later game, which those preseason games pretty much all are, then you're talking maybe a hotel and stuff like that too. And it becomes a, you know, $150, $200 expense when I'm not watching Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, but I'm watching dudes that a lot of them will be bagging groceries in a couple weeks. So I think the NFL has some fixing to do in terms of the way they do their preseason stuff. And with that, we're out of time for today. So before something else stupid happens and we have to hang up and all the other technical difficulties, next week on Sunday is our season preview show. How are the Packers going to do? We will go game by game. How are the rest of the teams in the league going to do? Who's playing in the Super Bowl? Who's winning the MVP? Who's doing all of those things? And we will have a special guest for that and some special new things that we're going to try and do. And, Jeremy, since I know you're listening to the show, this officially makes you locked in, so you cannot flake on me. I have no idea if you have the tendency to do that or not, but now you can't. So there you go. Congratulations. Next week, Jeremy will join the show. We'll do video. We will do audio. We will have a little bit of everything for our season preview show. It'll be a long one next week, but thank you guys for sticking with us all off season long. Check out the show on Twitter. It's at Packer Pulse. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf, and you can follow our guest. His name was Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports, at Eric_Edholm. Check him out for NFL draft insights and all that sort of stuff throughout the course of the year, guys. It's going to be a fun year. The Green Bay Packers are going 19-0 and back to the Super Bowl and are going to be Super Bowl champions. Go ahead and tune in next week to see if I actually believe that is the case. But thank you guys for listening. And as always, one more preseason game. Jason will be in the house, so make sure that everybody gets out of that healthy. And then it'll be the Chicago Bears. Thank you for listening. As always, go Pack Go.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.